Hi guys, my name is Amaya and welcome to Never Too Much True Crime. I started a series where I talk about a new true crime story every week. If you love true crime as much as me, then let's get on with this week's case. I also started a segment called Women Who Kill, where I talk about the most infamous serial killers that you probably heard of or not. So sit back, relax, and let's get on with this case. This week we're going to be talking about Amelia Dyer. Amelia Elizabeth Hobley was born in 1836 in Pall Marsh, Bristol, England, a suburban area. Her father, Samuel Hobley, was a shoemaker and her mother, Sarah. Amelia loved literature and poetry. She was privileged enough to get an education. Not many children back then were able to get an education. Unfortunately, her childhood would go downhill when her mother was suffering from a mental illness from typhus fever, a bacterial infection that can cause rashes all throughout the body. This disease can cause depression and joint pain. If left untreated, it can cause inflammation of the brain and spinal cord or even death. Amelia witnessed her mother's violent behavior while taking care of her until her death in 1848. Later on, Amelia explains how her mother's mental illness had an effect on her, but it taught her about people who lose their minds through illness. This story gets worse. Not only did her mother die, but two of her sisters, the eldest Sarah Ann, who died in 1841 at the age of 6, and a younger sister also named Sarah Ann, who died in 1845. She was only a few months old. After her mother's death, Amelia lived with an aunt in Bristol for a short amount of time, serving in apprenticeship with a corset maker. Her eldest brother Thomas inherited the family shoe business. In 1861, at the age of 24, Amelia became permanently estranged from at least one of her brothers, James, and moved to Trinity Street, Bristol. There she married George Thomas. George was 59 and they both lied about their ages on the marriage certificate to reduce the age gap. George deducted 11 years from his age and Amelia added 6 years to hers. After they got married, Amelia started training to become a nurse. From talking with a midwife, Ellen Dane. A midwife is someone who is a health professional who cares for mothers and newborns around childbirth. She learned of an easier way to earn a living using her own home to provide and then farming of the babies for adoption or raising the babies herself in return for a regular payment or a single upfront fee from the baby's mothers. Many businesses were set up to take in these young women and care for them until they gave birth. The mothers left their unwanted babies to be looked at as nurse children. Unmarried mothers during the Victorian period often struggled to gain an income during that time. There were a lot of neglected children, a lot of poor people who couldn't take care of their families, where single parenthood and having kids out of wedlock were stigmatized. Being a single mother was immoral. The orphanage would only take babies from parents who were married and the father died. So it was harder for children that came from single parents or born out of wedlock to even have a roof over their heads. The lifespan of a child back then was very short because of so many low-income families struggling to take care of their children. There weren't any programs to help children. Most children were even abandoned in the streets. Very high poverty rates. It was a very difficult time. In 1834, the Poor Law Amendment Act had removed any financial obligation from the father of having children. So men didn't have any consequences for having illegitimate children. So women were left stranded to raise the kids on their own with no help. Abortion wasn't really an option at the time either, so women would go and hide to have their baby and then pay someone to get rid of it. That's how the whole baby farming came to be. It was a business profiting off of children. Most of these baby farmers were neglecting and abusing these children. The end goal was money. It was never really about actually caring about children at all and keeping them in a safe place. It was either the kids were abandoned in the streets or they would be in a stranger's home, not knowing what the stranger was capable of doing. The farmed out babies starved to save money. Noisy or demanding babies could be sedated with alcohol or a syrup containing opium. That was used often. Many children died as a result of using alcohol or opium. Opium killed far more infants through starvation than directly through overdose. Mothers who wanted to check on their children weren't allowed to see them. They would give the mothers a hard time, and some women were too scared or ashamed to tell the police about any suspected wrongdoing. Even the authorities often had problems tracing any children that were reported missing. Another method that baby farmers used was suffocating the babies while the mother was giving birth so that it looked like a stillbirth. Amelia had to leave nursing. She gave birth to her daughter, Ellen Thomas, in 1864. Women were not allowed to work while pregnant. In 1869, George Thomas died and Amelia needed money to take care of her. Amelia was desperate to make money from baby farming, and alongside taking in expectant women, she advertised to nurse and adopt a baby in return for a one-off payment and clothing for the child. In her advertisement and meetings with clients, she assured them that she was respectable and married and that she would provide a safe and loving home for the kids. There were newspapers that would have ads about nursing or to adopt. 15 shillings a month, or for the person to permanently adopt your kid, it would be under 2 months, a small sum of 12 pounds. So either a weekly fee or a permanent fee they had to pay for the kid, depending on if they wanted the person to just take care of them for the time being until they come back to take their kids, or permanently adopt them, and then Amelia would have to raise the kids on her own. Amelia really put baby farming on the map. Before Amelia, the baby farming business wasn't as popular, but once Amelia started putting out the ads in the newspaper and women giving their children, and she started making money from it, by the 19th century, there were over 2,000 baby farmers. So she's taking care of these children, telling the parents, hey, don't worry, this is a safe place for them, I'll take care of them, writing letters to the mothers. But soon after, her baby farming career would take a dark turn. You see, Amelia let the children die through neglect and starvation. If it was from neglect or starvation, she disposed the bodies in rivers. It was said that she would wait for the bodies to decompose so they wouldn't be identified or traced back to her. Each child she murdered, she kept a receipt so she was able to pocket the money she received. She had a long history of going back and forth to asylums due to mental instability and suicidal tendencies. Amelia would use this to her advantage so she wouldn't get caught. She was a very calculated woman. You know, if you remember earlier, her mother had a mental illness, so she watched how her mother acted, very violent towards everybody, and she copied it to make it seem like she was crazy. She hated when people were suspicious of her. She was able to get away with murder for at least 30 years. During the whole baby farming situation, Amelia started abusing alcohol and opium-based products early in her killing career. People have stated that she would take these to numb herself because of the cruel things she was doing to those children, they believe. She took alcohol and opium-based products daily. She became an addict, also using it to detach herself from reality. In 1870, a woman by the name Margaret Walters, a baby farmer, and her sister were investigated because she killed a child and the mother didn't want the child killed. Four babies were killed in a short span of this time. This raised a lot of suspicion. Margaret was sentenced to hang for her crimes. This would make Amelia go into hiding. Ellen Dane, the woman that got Amelia into baby farming, also went into hiding from investigators. In 1872, Amelia married William Dyer, a brewer's laborer from Bristol. They had two children together, Mary Ann, also known as Polly, and William Samuel. Amelia eventually left him. He lost his job, and that's how she went back into baby farming again. There's a lot of going in and out of asylums, and there's also her baby farming. And then she stops baby farming. When going to the asylum didn't work and people were complaining and four babies died within the 2 weeks, again, investigators were trying to find any proof they could to arrest Amelia at this time, but instead of her turning herself in for the crimes, she would try to overdose on the opium syrup. She drank 2 bottles. It was supposed to kill her. It didn't kill her because her body had a high tolerance of it because she was drinking it every day. Amelia was able to not get caught by police until she was eventually caught in 1879 after a doctor was suspicious about the number of children's death he had been called to certify in her care. However, there wasn't enough evidence again to charge her for murder. Instead, she was sentenced to 6 months hard labor. By this time, baby farming became a very risky business since parents were complaining and reports were being made about the children being abused and neglected. This resulted in Amelia strangling the babies instead of starving them. So now, she's not starving these babies and letting them, you know, cry or giving them drugs to put them to sleep so that they'll die. She's literally strangling babies now to make the process quicker. In 1890, Amelia cared for the illegitimate baby of a governess. She fell in love with a young master of the house she worked in and got pregnant. She responds to Amelia's ad. The governess lived with Amelia and took care of her before she gave birth. After giving birth, Amelia persuades the governess to leave her baby in her care. She leaves. When she returns to visit the child to pay the final payment, The governess was immediately suspicious and knew that the baby wasn't her child. She strips the baby's clothes to see if her child's birthmark on the baby's hip was there. It wasn't. So that's all the proof that she needed. So this is not her child. The woman brought the police with her on several occasions to get her baby back. Amelia just made excuses saying that the baby was adopted by a couple. Amelia would move to different locations using fake names because parents who wanted to reclaim their children were hunting her down and brought investigators with them. Amelia's mental health really took a toll on her. She started having hallucinations. A doctor had to come in. She was being aggressive and very violent. She was sent to an asylum again. In 1893, this was the last time that she would be discharged from an asylum. 2 years later, Amelia moves to Caversham, Berkshire. She ends up making a friend, Jane Graney Smith. They would move to a new place in Reading. Later the same year, Jane was persuaded by Amelia to refer to as mother in front of the innocent women handing over their children. This was an effort to present a caring mother-daughter image. She groomed Jane and manipulated her and, you know, telling her, hey, call me mother in front of my new clients to make it seem like she's trustworthy, but she wasn't. She lied to Jane. She promised her, you know, a good life, but basically Jane was a servant to Amelia and was also being mistreated, cleaning the house all day long and taking care of the children. Amelia started getting multiple babies under her care. The babies will go in and out of the house. Jane didn't even get a chance to remember their names because moments later, another baby was in the home. She was killing babies at a faster rate than before, 6 infants a day. So this woman was really killing a lot of babies, like every day, 6 babies a day. That's a lot of babies the whole week. So she was killing faster, and that's very scary. Jane didn't have a clue where the babies were going. They were just disappearing. Poof, gone. This made Jane feel very uneasy. Jane becomes curious. She starts to snoop around to see what Amelia was up to. She went to a children's center where a woman greeted her, and Jane realized that Amelia was taking these babies and doing horrible things to them. She tells Mrs. Bennett, the woman that greeted her, telling her that these kids were disappearing. Mr. Bennett was a NSPCC officer who visited Amelia and asked her questions. So basically, he had some sort of business where I guess you can compare it to Child Protective Services, something like that. So she didn't have a license and she gets reported. Then investigators had her under observation. So police were keeping an eye on her. They're like, okay, she doesn't have a license. She's having all these babies. Apparently all these babies are disappearing. Let's just keep an eye on her and see what she's doing. In January of 1896, Evelina Marmon, a 25-year-old barmaid, gave birth to an illegitimate daughter, Doris, in a boarding house. She quickly sought after for adoption and placed an advertisement in the Miss Scandalous section of the Bristol Times and Mirror newspaper. It simply read, "Wanted respectable woman to take a young child." Marmon intended to go back to work and hope that she would get her child back. So she sees Amelia's advertisement on a newspaper. They go back and forth. They start writing to each other. Basically, Amelia said she had no problem taking care of her child. And again, that she's married and she's very fond of children. She loves children. Marmon wanted to pay Amelia weekly, but Amelia convinced her and said, hey, you know, instead of paying a weekly payment, just pay a one-time fee. They come to an agreement. She brings the child over. Marmon was surprised by Amelia's appearance because she was very stocky. She was just old lady. Like, she didn't, you know, it was unexpected. You would think somebody that's young would be into the baby farming business, but it's not really shocking that an old lady was doing baby farming. She hands her daughter to Amelia and a cardboard box of clothes and 10 euros. So she writes a letter, you know, they're writing letters or whatever, you know, to check up on her daughter. She responds one time and then she never responds to this lady ever again. Amelia lied saying that she was going to travel somewhere, but unfortunately she didn't really travel anywhere. Amelia would find a white tape and she would wrap it twice around the baby's neck. Amelia said that she liked to watch them with the tape around their neck. Her daughter Polly allegedly helped her mother wrap the body in a napkin. Amelia would pay rent, right? And she gave the landlord a pair of the dead baby shoes as a gift. The following day, 1896, another child named Harry Simmons was taken to Mayo Road. There was a spare white edging tape available, and she would wrap it around the baby's neck, and the baby died. On April 2nd, both of the bodies were stacked into a carpet bag along with bricks that added weight. She would then go back to Reading at a secluded spot where nobody wouldn't really go to check, and she would dispose of the bodies in the river. On March 30th, 1896, a package was retrieved by a bargeman. So basically somebody passes by the river and they see the package in the water where the babies are. And again, this was her usual spot that she would dispose of the bodies. So there was multiple babies in that river. But Amelia, she was sloppy. She didn't really think things all the way through, because on the packages where the babies were in, there was a label on it. It had the name Mrs. Thomas on it, and it had an address. So Mrs. Thomas was the fake name that Amelia was using, and they traced it back to her. So she's caught. The evidence was enough to lead police to Amelia, but they still had no strong evidence to connect her directly with a serious crime. Additional evidence that they received from witnesses and information obtained from Bristol police only served to increase their concerns. And DC Anderson with Sergeant James placed Amelia's home under surveillance. So the officers come up with a plan to use a young woman as a decoy, you know, hoping she would be able to have a meeting with Amelia to discuss her services. They know that this lady is shady and that she's doing some mess, okay? The police are very confident at this point, but they need that solid evidence to arrest her. And this is how they would do it. Amelia was expecting her new client to show up, but instead the detectives were outside waiting on her doorstep. On April 3rd, police raided her home. They smelt like a strong stench, which, pause, my thing is that a lot of people were going in and out of that house, right? Like, she was having clients and stuff coming to her home. Nobody didn't notice like the stench that was there. The only person that noticed the foul stench actually was Jane. Jane's the one that smelt the stench coming from her home, but nobody else didn't say, hey, like, it smells kind of weird here. That's just me. I don't know. No human remains were found in her home. There was plenty of other related evidence, including the tape that she would use to strangle the babies, telegrams about adoption arrangements, pawn tickets for children's clothing, receipts for advertisements, and letters from mothers asking about the well-being of their children. She would kill the babies, and she would take the clothing, and she would sell them to make money off of it. So not only was she making money off of killing these babies, right? She was making money off of pawning their stuff. The police, they start to calculate, and at least 20 children have been placed in the care of Mrs. Thomas, now revealed to be Amelia Dyer. She was also going to move again so she wouldn't get caught. Police estimated that over these years, over 30 years, she killed over 400 babies. On April 4th, Amelia was arrested and charged with murder. Her son-in-law, Arthur, was charged as an accessory. Investigators would go back to the same river and they would find more bodies. So more bodies were discovered at the time that she was arrested. When police would confront her about the way that she would kill the babies and like they found the tape, Amelia would say, "That's how you could tell that it was one of mine." Do you remember Marmon? You know, the woman that gave her baby away. They were able to identify her baby's remains through the clothing and items that Amelia had. That's just heartbreaking, like, to find out that your baby is no longer here, like, your baby's gone. And, like, investigators have to pull you aside and tell you that. Mary Ann and Arthur, the two people that were accused of being her accessory to the murders, there was no evidence found. They were both discharged because Amelia wrote a confession letter stating that they had nothing to do with it, that it was all her fault, it was all her, so she took all the responsibility. May 22nd, 1896, she appeared at the Old Bailey and pleaded guilty to one murder, Doris, the little girl. Her family and associates testified at her trial that they had been growing suspicious and uneasy about her activities. There was also evidence from a man who saw Amelia dispose of two bodies. The only defense that they had that they could use was insanity. You have to understand that this woman was very calculated and everything that she did. She had a whole system of how she killed. She would use fake vulnerability with these people and try to, you know, pretend to sympathize with her victims and, oh, I understand what you're going through. I can help you. I can be there for you, right? Manipulation at its finest. Like, she had a whole system of how she killed. It was very detailed. It was very calculated. This woman, in my opinion, she was not insane. She knew what she was doing. I feel like the drugs did make her mental health decline, but I don't think she was crazy. I feel like she pretended and acted like she was crazy so that she could get away with murder, but that's just how I feel about it. They couldn't go with the insanity thing because basically the court was like, yeah, no, she would only go to the asylums to avoid accountability. It took the jury only 4.5 minutes to find her guilty. In her 3 weeks in the cell, she filled 5 books with her last true and only confession, and she gave the books away. The charges on her daughter, Polly, would be dropped. Amelia was hanged at Newgate Prison on Wednesday, June 10th, 1896. They asked her, do you have anything to say? She said, I have nothing to say, just before being dropped at 9 a.m. And there you have it, folks. That is the story of Amelia Dyer. I feel like every case that I've done so far, or just any story about any killer, I always say, yo, they were crazy. I think the reason why she killed was because she liked to do it. She got like a rush from it. And also I think it has a lot to do with like her traumas and growing up with her mom being sick with mental illness. Let me know what you guys think about this story. Do you think that she was actually crazy, or do you think she wasn't crazy and she just pretended to be crazy? As always, thank you guys so much for your support and listening to me. And I'll see you guys next week with a brand new Never Too Much True Crime. And yeah, peace out, guys.